I was about to help that old man off the stage, but after that, he's on his own. So, and he's got a boot on and everything already. So that would have been bad if you were to fail. That would have been really bad. I would have felt bad for about 2 minutes, Harlan. That's what I would have been. Guys, you know, this morning we're talking about the power of design. We're going to talk a bit about the intricacies of our bodies and the creation and stuff. And so as you notice, I was sitting there with Dr. Warren. And guys, he comes in a few weeks. He's going to be talking a whole lot about some creation, some evolution, some DNA. If you notice, I was nodding my head like I understood what he was saying, but I really didn't have a clue much. But Dr. Warren's great. He's a neuroscientist. He's got a couple of doctorates. He also, at the school, teaches Hebrew and Greek. I mean, he's that kind of smart, but yet super engaging. So that morning, in 2 weeks, we're going to have a message about knowing what you believe. And that night, we're going to come back together. Dr. Warren's going to kind of just have an open forum of question and answer. We can ask anything we want to ask. He's going to be able to talk about it scientifically as well as biblically. It's going to be really, really good. So I want to encourage you to be here for that on that evening. So this morning we're talking about the power of design. Let me ask you this. So there was a guy named Robert Wise who wrote a book called Your Churning Place. And he tells a story about Burt Lancaster. Who in here knows who Burt Lancaster was? Now see, look around. That's good. When I preached the sermon in Fountain, I think two hands went up. They had no clue who Burt Lancaster was, right? They're just a bunch of youngins down there. That's what it was. But Burt Lancaster was of course, a famous movie star who made almost 100 movies between 1939 and 1989. But before, you may not know this, but before he became an actor, he was actually a circus performer. He worked in the circus. And he was lucky to even get that job. Because it says when he went to his audition, he was asked to perform on the parallel bars. And so he did. He jumped up on the parallel bars. He had a routine he had practiced. And he got up and he spun. And at one spot in this routine, he spun. He overspun and fell about 10 feet to the floor flat on his face. So he was so humiliated that he immediately jumped back up on the bars. And he began to do it again. And he spun again. And at the same point, he flipped off again and again landed on his face. Now, at this time, he was cut, and he was bleeding. You know, his tights were ripped. He was humiliated. But again, he figured, okay, I'm going to do this again. So for the third time, he got on the bars. And luckily, the third time, he didn't fall flat on his face. Instead, he fell on his back, okay, at the same time. It was even worse than before. And the agent came over, the guy who was auditioning him, and he said, "Son, if you promise not to do that again, you got the job," right? And he got the job. That's where it started off. And Burt Lancaster, though, he was frustrated, right? He knew he could do the job. He knew he could do what was planned, but every time he tried, he failed. A lesser man may have given up after the first time, but Lancaster was so convinced of his own abilities, so convinced of his own talents, that he kept on trying and trying, even though he fell down and fell down. See, many great men and women over the years have kind of shown that same approach to life, right? I mean, look back at Henry Ford. Guys, Henry Ford was broke at the age of 40. And that's when he went on to create one of the first automobile empires that we know of today. Albert Einstein actually flunked in math. And yet, of course, he devised some of the most powerful math equations ever known. One of Great Britain's greatest naval admirals, Horatio Nelson, suffered from seasickness. Helen Keller, we know the story of Helen Keller. She couldn't see, she couldn't hear. But she graduated with honors from Radcliffe College. Abraham Lincoln, and we've heard stories of Abraham Lincoln. He was well known throughout his life for his failures in business, in life, and all these things. And yet he was remembered most of all by what? By being one of the most, greatest presidents of our nation. And these people, like so many others, overcame difficulties because they were convinced that they had purpose. They were convinced that they had value. A purpose and a value that their handicaps could not damage or they couldn't undermine them. In fact, Abraham Lincoln explained the reason that he was driven to accomplish so much in his life. This is what he wrote. He said, "Surely God would not have created such a being as man with an ability to grasp the infinite to exist only for a day." No, no, he says, man was made for immortality. Guys, our created bodies are amazing, right? And look, I'm no medical genius. In fact, I know that if right now I had to take a biology class or an, or a anatomy class or physiology class or some other ology class right now, I would fail the class, okay? I know that. But I'm still constantly blown away by the intricacies of the human body. So with that, let me tell you a story. So 2 weeks ago tomorrow, Monday, August 28th, 2 days before my birthday, I went in. My wife convinced me I finally needed to go in and get a physical. All right, I haven't had a physical in over a decade, so it's time to get a physical, right? So I go in, and I'm sitting in the office, and I'm filling out the paperwork. And when I fill out the paperwork, I started getting a pain right here in the back of my side. Hadn't had that pain up until then. I started getting a pain. And it was about, you know, the 0 to 10 pain scale. I was probably at a 2 right there, maybe a 3. By the time I got into the exam room, it had gone up to about a 5 or so. And the nurse comes in, and she confirms why I'm there, right, to get my physical. And she says, is there anything else going on? I said, well, actually, I got this pain, you know. And I'd already given my sample that you have to give, right? And so my doctor comes in a few minutes later, and my pain has now gone up to about a 7. And she says, yeah, there was some, it was your sample's a little bit dark, and you know, you may have a kidney stone, is what she tells me. Now, how many of you guys have had kidney stones in here? Anybody? Okay. It was not good, okay? And so, I mean, my pain was escalating. I was squirming. I couldn't move. And so I guess the lucky thing for me is she looked at me and said, okay, well, I can tell you a lot of discomfort. So we at least won't check your prostate today. Okay. So I was like, okay, thank you. That's one good thing, I guess. Right. And so I go, I give my blood. Because I'm in the doctor's office, she sets up a CAT scan for me in a few hours. She gives me a prescription for pain pills right off the bat. So I drive to Walgreens where we get our medicine, and I am now my pain has gotten even worse. And I go in and I give the prescription, and I'm standing there, and she says it's gonna be about 30 minutes. I was like, oh, okay. So I didn't know what to do, so I went out. I was gonna go lay down in my Suburban, but I couldn't even lay down. I couldn't move. I mean, I'm in the parking lot, leaning on my car, my Suburban, just doing everything I can not to throw up. I'm in so much pain, right? Some random guy comes by and says, hey, buddy, are you okay? Anything I can do for you? I was like, man, no, I'm not okay. That's why I'm here in this parking lot waiting on pills, right? I probably shouldn't have said that in that parking lot. I probably could have got some other pills while I was at it, but I didn't. And so I finally go in. I get the medicine, and I take a pill. I go back home to lay down for, I got about an hour or so before the CAT scan. So I lay down, and it's not working. So about 30, 45 minutes in, I take another pill, which I then proceed to drive. So I was driving under the influence, I'll just be honest with you, okay? But I finally get to the CAT scan, I have a kidney stone blocking, right? About a 5 millimeter kidney stone with a couple more behind it, they said. Okay, not as big as that one, but a couple more. And so I'm in pain. I drive back home, and I'm not good, and I'm laying down at my house, and I'm a mess. And about 7 that night, the pain stops, just stops. Well, come to find out, you know, I guess the kidney stone can move. And relieve it for a while. I didn't know that at the time. At the time, I think, well, maybe I passed it. I don't even know that I passed it. I don't even know what happened, right? And so I go. I find out later I would know. That's what they tell me, okay? So I go to the doctor. So the next morning, I have a urologist appointment. So I go to the urologist. He looks at the scans. Yes, you have this, and yes, you have. You can set that up, or you can just wait, see if it's going to pass. Well, this past Monday, Labor Day, which was a week after I found out I had the stones, I was supposed to be running in a half marathon that I've been training for. I saved up. I'd had people donate money for this mission that we were raising money for. And so I said, well, you know what? Let me see if I can pass it, because he told me all about the surgery, the stent I was going to have put in, all this fun stuff. And I was like, there's no way I could run it with that. So let me wait and just see if I can just be okay. So my surgery was scheduled for this past Wednesday. Well, 5:30 a.m. on my birthday, Wednesday, I wake up in just worse pain than I was on Monday. And then for the next 6-7 hours, it was bad. I mean, I and people say that this is the closest a man can get, right, to understanding childbirth. But as a husband of a wife who's had 4, and I was there every time, she didn't have any medication, I would never say that out loud, okay, that my pain was as bad as hers, because that would be crazy. But I was in so much pain that we called and set up an emergency surgery for me on Thursday morning. So Thursday morning, now about 11:30, 12 o'clock that day, the pain stopped again, right? And so, but surgery was set. I knew I couldn't have this hit me again, especially if I'm going to try to run this race. And so I go, and Thursday morning, I have surgery. Now I have a picture. I think it worked. First day it didn't work. That's kind of not, it's kind of a sideways. So Stu came and saw me bright and early in the morning. And so I'm getting ready to go in for surgery. So I go in, I have the surgery, and it was fine. Everything went well. They put the stent in and everything. Well, the race I was going to run on Monday my goal was, if some of you guys know my son Seth, some of you don't, but I have a special needs son, that I was going to push him in his wheelchair for the race. I hadn't trained with him with the wheelchair. I figured, you know what? I've never ran a half marathon. Let's make it even harder, right? And let's push Seth in his wheelchair. And so I get to the race, and we actually get up that morning to go run, and we go run the race. I don't know if I had that picture shows up or not. There you go. So there's Seth and I at 6 a.m. before the race, and we run the race. Now, I run, walk the race is what I do because I was in pain still from the surgery. I hadn't prepared really well to push a wheelchair for 13.1 miles and up and through dirt and up things. And luckily for me, I had Bob Callahan, who was playing keys up here earlier. He ran with me as well. Me and Seth hung out with us the whole time, and it was good. And Seth had a blast, and he had so much fun. It was awesome. But you know, I look at all this and I start thinking of how amazing the body is. And the whole grand design of our body, because the crazy thing about this, you want to feel like a real man, the size of this kidney stone, right? I think I have another picture. So you see that? That is the stent they put in, okay? Which means that's bigger than the actual kidney stone that it was kept. It felt like it was the size of my head. That's what it felt like, right? But it was not. It was smaller than that right there that caused my body to be complete. Caused me to be asking God to just kill me, right? I mean, that's what it was. I could not. It was so bad. And I think about how something that small, how intricate that is. And yet people say, well, you know, everything that's happened with your body, it's just happened by chance, by accident, basically, right? And I'm thinking, there's no, God created this in such a unique way that something even that small will let you know that something's wrong with you and your body, right? And we look in Psalm 139 today. We're going to be in Psalm 139 throughout the morning. And here is David, and he's arrived at this conclusion about how amazing his body is. He's come to believe that he has been created by God, and with that, the possibilities for him are endless. Psalm 139. In fact, if you go to Psalm 139 and we jump to verse 13 right off the bat, and this is what it says in Psalm 139, verse 13. David says to God, "For you created my inmost being. You knit me together in my mother's womb. I praise you because I am fearfully and wonderfully made. Your works are wonderful. I know that full well." Here's David. He had realized that he had been made in such a unique way and fearfully and wonderfully. He had been knit together. Every minute little thing had been knit together by God. And look, I did some study. Nobody agrees on maybe when David wrote this. He could have been sitting on the side of a hillside watching over his dad's sheep when he was a young man. He could have been in his palace looking over his kingdom. I don't know exactly when he wrote it, but some things happened in his mind where it turned his thoughts to God. Turned his thoughts to how amazing his creation was in the human being. In fact, let's look at some things that may have been going on in his mind during this time. But first of all, let's look at the what for a second. Let's look at the what. What may have been going on in his mind? I don't know. If he's sitting on the hillside watching the sheep, or if he's in his kingdom, maybe he's just recognizing things about his own body. Maybe he looks at his hand. Right? He looks at his hands and he starts realizing how amazing his hands are. In fact, Dr. Scott Carrison, he noted that hands are one of, he said, the most intricate and beautiful parts of the human body. 19 bones arranged in such a way that you can form a cup with them, you can form an arch with them, you can make it flat, you can ball up a fist. Right? You can pick up with your fingertips the smallest of needles. You can put your hand in your pocket and determine whether you have a dime or a penny in your pocket. They can feel that. He said, it's so unique. In fact, he said, there's not a single engineer out there creating robotic hands that can create anything near as perfect as the hand. So maybe David just looked at his hands and realized there's something really amazing about what God did here. Or maybe he just heard a bird in the tree, right? Maybe he started hearing something. He recognized his ears. And there's a writer named Whitaker Chambers. He wrote a book where he was sitting in a chair and his daughter was sitting on his lap, his little 2-year-old daughter, and he started recognizing and noticing her ear. And he just looked intently at her ear and he was struck by the design of that ear. Right? How beautiful it was, how shell-like it was, how perfectly designed to catch every sound from the airwaves, right? To catch them and then translate them into the brain, right? He was blown away by the ear. And knowing something in the mechanics of the ear, because he's a mechanical engineer, he began to think about that. He's not a believer at this time. And he was struck by how impossible, he said, it is that anything so intricate,
so complex and so beautifully designed could ever occur by chance. And that led him to other lines of thought that eventually led him to a relationship with Jesus Christ. Right? Or, so maybe it was the hand, maybe it was the ear, or maybe David, who wasn't a mechanical engineer, just a shepherd at the time, or maybe even the king at the time, he started thinking about his breathing. Let's think about our breathing for a minute. In fact, everybody do me a favor. With me, take a breath in. You ready? Take a breath in. Okay, now breathe out. Okay, do that one more time. Breathe in. And breathe out. Now imagine if you had to consciously think about doing that all day, every day. If you had to think, okay, take a breath. Okay, now I got to let it out. Okay, now I got to take another breath. Okay, I mean, how long do you think you could live? Not very long. I'm not the brightest person. I would forget somewhere in there, or I fall asleep, right? I mean, no, God created our body, designed our lungs to automatically do that action over and over and over again. He designed it that way. Look, I don't know what got David thinking about this. I don't. But whatever got him thinking about it led him to realize how much he must have meant to God to create him and knit him and form him just the way he was. As an individual, he cared about him. He was fearfully and wonderfully made. God cared enough about him to knit him together in such a marvelous and awe-inspiring way. And when David thought about that, he realized how much God had to have cared for him. And that led him to realize that God cared so much that he would always be there for him as well. So maybe that was the what. I don't know. But maybe it was the where. Okay, maybe it was the where. We can go back to Psalm 139, and let's jump to verse 7, okay? And he's asking the question of God. It's a great question he's asking. He says, where can I go from your spirit? Where can I flee from your presence? If I go up to the heavens, you're there. If I make my bed in the depths, you are there. If I rise on the wings of the dawn, if I settle on the far side of the sea, even there your hand will guide me, your right hand will hold me fast. Here's David basically visualizing the greatest distances he can even think of, right? As far away as up into the heavens, to the greatest depths, across the sea to a land he doesn't even know about. He says, no matter what I do, where I go, you're going to be there for me. What a great encouragement to us this morning to remember that in our own heads, that no matter where we are in life, God is always going to be there. That's what David realized thousands of years ago. It was thinking about how marvelously made he was, that God had created him, that led David to realize that God would always be there for him wherever and whenever he was. And that God's love for him is what gave him value and gave him purpose. Right? That's what gave him value and purpose, the love of God for him. Not the people around him, not his job, not the relationship. No, it was God's love for him. That's what it was. And we all realize, guys, that there are people in our world today that don't believe in God, right? They don't believe that there's a God. They don't believe in this creation thing. In fact, if you know somebody like that, bring him a couple of weeks from now with Dr. Warren on Sunday evening. It's going to be some great conversation about that kind of stuff. But there are people that don't believe that. There are people out there who believe that man is just a little bit more than just an advanced animal. A complex, yes, but accidental collection of chemical interactions that really has no purpose and no value except for reproduction, right? That's what our purpose is. In fact, this is proved out several years ago. Time magazine put out an article, and it was written by the evolutionary author named Robert Wright. And he was, in this article, he was answering the question, what makes people happy? And this is what he found. This is what he discovered, okay? He said, people so reliably pursue food and sex because eating and sex release neurochemicals that make them feel happy. And the reason that this neurochemical rule is a part of the human heritage is that the genes responsible for it have understandably done well for themselves. Right? In other words, he's saying this. We're able to be happy because our happy genes survived evolution. Right? They luckily made it through so we can be happy. If they wouldn't have made it through, then we'd just be moping around all the time. But luckily, our happy genes made it through. It goes even further than that. There was another Time magazine article that told of a science called evolutionary biology. Now, the premise of this science is that we are just human animals. That's all we are. We're just human animals. And we can look to the realm of animals, other animals, for reasonable models to explain our rationale, explain how we live and why we live our lives. According to this article, this is what they said. It is to man, this is the men in the room, it's to our evolutionary advantage to sow our seeds far and wide. We're just naturally, we're going to naturally sleep around because that's how we are as men. It's a natural thing, according to this evolutionary biologist. Women, though, they seek mates with the best genes and the most to invest in offspring. And because they're such opposite ideas, these strategies can put sexes in conflict with one another. Well, yeah, if you can explain away, I sleep around because I'm just a man, right? Okay, that would work really well with my wife. Uh-huh. Okay. And then form bases this understanding of, it says this is why there's infidelity, this is why there's promiscuity in the human race. Thus, it's understandable to a race of animals, as Time Magazine says, that have evolved into this present higher form. So basically, what these articles are saying, without God in the picture with us, without God in the picture of creation, then men and women are reduced to being just a selfish animal who are principally driven by two things, food and reproduction. That's it. That's what this evolutionary biologist tells us. You can't. This tells me, this here lies one of the greatest distances between evolution and creation. Right? In fact, Alan Webster put it this way. He says, evolution sees man as one step above the apes, where Scripture and creation sees man as just one step below the angels. And yet, I won't take it a step further because, guys, the angels weren't created in God's image. Only you and I were. All this stuff has David thinking and saying here. He realizes what a marvelous creation he is. He's sitting on that hillside, or he's sitting in his throne room. I don't know. He's felt some breath, the breath of air come across him. He's seen his chest rise and fall. He's heard something. I don't know what it is, but all these things has got him to the point where he realizes that this is no accident. He is designed by God, fearfully and wondrously made. So that's kind of the what and the when, but let's look at the who, okay? Let's look at the who, because this whole idea then points to, I think, one of the most major important things and characteristics of Christianity. We believe we were created by God. That's vital to who we say we are as believers. And because we've been created by God, we realize that we've been created for something more than just selfishness, more than just the seeking of pleasure. Right? You and I, we're made to do great things. In fact, anytime you start thinking poorly about yourself or thinking, man, I can't believe I look like this, act like this, smell like this, whatever it is, I want you to remember something. Ephesians chapter 2, verse 10 says this. Paul says this about us. We are God's handiwork. You get that? You don't call something handiwork if it's just thrown together. We are God's handiwork, created in Christ Jesus to do good works, which God prepared in advance for us to do. We're his handiwork. See, Burt Lancaster, he fell again and again and again, but he kept getting back up again and again and again because he knew what he was capable of. Inside of his heart and his mind, there was confidence of his own abilities and confidence of his own value. But guess what? That's not even enough. If that's all we're going to live our life on is just in our own confidence, in our own self-worth, in our own self-value, we're still not going to make it through this life because there's more to that. We're created in God's handiwork. See, there are many in our world today who push the idea of the power of positive thinking. Right? That's what it is. It's the power of positive thinking. That's all you need. Power of positive thinking. You can get what you want. And if you just believe it enough, you can get it. And if you just want it enough, you can get it because you just have power of positive thinking. And I have nothing against the power of positive thinking. It's okay as far as it goes. But a lot of times, it's just to be honest, it's just wishful thinking. It's what it is, right? And you can't really, it doesn't work that way in real life. Like if I really wanted to fly right now, I would love to fly. If I had to have one superpower, flying would probably be it. I really would, right? If I could fly right now, and I believed I could fly. Sing it for me. I believe, I'm just kidding. I can, okay. If I really wanted to fly right now, but I believed with all my heart, and I know that all I got to do is I'm going to come right over here, and I'm going to take right off because the Perkins
can save me just in case I don't make it, right? No, but they don't have to because I have complete confidence I'm going to be able to do this. I can fly, right? I can do it. I believe it. I have complete confidence, right? So if I take off this step and I jump, what's going to happen? David's going to move. He's going to let me hit the ground. He's not going to save me at all because he's that kind of a friend. But that's okay. But no, that's what it'll be, right? Because that's just, guys, there's realities in life. There just is. We all know that, right? Power of positive thinking is nice, but that's not what's going to get you through life. And that's not what's going to get David through life. David, I guarantee you, David was a man who had some positive thinking going on in his life. He was a man of confidence. He was a man of courage. But his confidence and courage were not based on his personal abilities and his personal potential, of which he had many, right? No, they were based on God's power and God's grace. David was a man who was willing to face giants. He led his soldiers against enemies that were overwhelming, and he defeated them. But his confidence wasn't based entirely upon on who he was. His confidence was based on the realization that he was created in the image of God, and he was special to him. Go back to Psalm 139. Go back to the beginning, verse 1. This is what he's telling God. He says, "You have searched me, Lord, and you know me. You know when I sit and when I rise. You perceive my thoughts from afar. You discern my going out and my lying down. You're familiar with all my ways. Before a word is on my tongue, you, Lord, know it completely. You hem me in from behind and before. You lay your hand upon me." Guys, he knew that God had laid his hand upon him. He knew that this was the basis of his feeling of value and his feeling of purpose. And when I was reading this psalm for the first time a few months ago, studying this, I realized something I don't think I'd ever realized before about this psalm. I never saw it before. And that's what I saw in Psalm 139 was it was a psalm that was not just an ordinary song, another song that was being written, but this was a love song being written to God from David. It was a love song. He was sharing his undying love and affection and belief in God. You guys have probably all seen a young man who was in love, right? He was so in love with that girl, and it was so bleh, right? I mean, that's right, kind of what it was, right? I was that guy the one time, right? Back in the 80s, when I fell in love, I fell hard in love. And I couldn't think of anything but that girl. I talked about her all the time. I tried to talk to her every chance I got. I wanted to be with her every chance I got. When I got back to my dorm room in college after a date with her, I would sit down and rack my brain to make sure I hadn't done or said something so stupid she didn't want to hang out with me again, right? I mean, I was in love with her. Everything I wanted to do was about her, and I wanted to make sure that was it. And when you're around a guy like that, you sense that he realizes how much he has in that girl, how much he has and how lost he'd be without her. And that, you know, and luckily for me, I got to marry that girl and been married now for about 28 years, which is awesome. But guys, that's how I think how David comes across in this psalm. It's a lover's poem, it's a lover's song, an expression of his adoration of God. He focuses the bulk of this song on proclaiming how much he loves God, how much he wants to love what God loves and hate what God hates. Right? He wants to go to great lengths to express how much he cares about God and loves God. In fact, twice in this thing, he asked God to examine his heart and make sure it's clean, make sure it's acceptable. He wants to make sure he's worthy enough to be loved by God. See, nothing in David's life at this time matters more than his love and his relationship with God. He is hopelessly in love with God. And that's why the Bible tells us, I think, that David was a man after God's own heart, right? And I don't know about you, man, I want my life to be that with God. I want my relationship with God to be like that. I want to get there in my relationship with God. I want to get to the point where all I seem to be able to talk about is God. I want to get to the point where in everything I do, I'm worried about, is this going to be pleasing God? Let that be my filter. Is what I'm about to do, say, is this going to please God? See, people in love, that's what they do, right? They're vulnerable with one another. They want to be honest with one another. They want to be open with one another because they trust in each other's love. And a man or a woman in love is driven, they're a driven individual, right? They'll do anything to please the one that they love. And they act like that because they sense that the one they love also loves them. It's when we truly realize how much God cares for us that our lives then take on a new meaning and a new purpose and a new value. So I guess this question this morning is how about you? Can you accept that kind of love from God? He loves you that much. Can you accept that kind of love from him? Can you love him back with that same attitude and that same depth and that same manner? Guys, you have been amazingly designed by God to be exactly who you are, exactly the way you are. And he loves you with a unending, unexplainable, unearnable kind of love. More than any parent can love their child or any spouse can love one another, he loves you that much. Can you love him like that? Can you accept that love from him? That's the challenge this morning. Let me pray for us this morning. God, I come this morning, God, thank you for the challenge of this psalm of my own life. God, as I preach this and teach this and study this, to be reminded of how much you loved me, God, what a great example, what a great love song from David. To know that you know wherever I am, you know me. You know my innermost thoughts. You know my where I've been, where I'm going. You know all of that, God, and you love me so much that you sent your son to die for me. You created me. You knitted me together in such a unique way, God, so that you could be a part of who I am. So, God, thank you for that in my own life. And I pray that this morning as we leave this place, that as we go back into our lives and work and school and all the things we got going on, that we would be reminded that we have been fearfully and wondrously made by you. We are on purpose, God. We're your handiwork. We're not an accident. You were your handiwork. And you love us so much that you created us to be in your image. So God, thank you for this challenge this morning. Thank you for the story of David. God, help us in our own minds to remember the what's in our life, the amazingness of who we are. And God, help us to remember that we cannot escape you. Wherever we are, whenever we are, you're always there. You want to be there for us. And God, help us to love you the way you deserve to be loved. Help us to accept the love from you that we need to accept from you. God, you're awesome. Thank you for this morning. Thank you for this challenge in my own life and in all of our lives. And we give this over to you, God. In your name we pray. Amen.